Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Time for an update from Codal now. Bernard Aylward joins us. We're going to talk a little bit about what the company's been up to in Mali with its Bougouni lithium project and various other matters besides. So, Bernard, how are you? Nice to see you.
To see you, Alistair. I'm really well, thanks. Enjoying the period coming up to Christmas. Very busy year, very exciting year for us, but, you know, nice to have a break to look forward to.
Indeed. So you've got a few reasons to be cheerful. You've got the sort of recent news flow from Bougouni. You've got a lithium price that's been somewhat supportive in recent months. And the Australian market, at least, seems to be waking up to a kind of new bullish cycle in mining in general. Tell us how you're feeling at Codal.
Look, I think you're right. We've actually got a lot of positives. You know, we had our first shipment out from the port of San Pedro just last week. A great milestone for us. We had the official opening with the president of Mali in attendance, ministers, dignitaries, local community, a hugely popular day. And, you know, for me, it was really great to see the team there and how proud they were, but also the community, and to get that feedback from them that it was what they saw a great thing for the community and the region. That's really positive for us. And, you know, looking back at the start of 2025, we had our first production from the plant in February, and that was on the back of, you know, actually starting work at Bougouni. And I first went there in late July 2016. It's a very different world now, Alistair, and a very different site. But, you know, there's lots of reasons for us to be positive about what we've done. And then, as you say, the market in general's a lot more supportive than it was a couple of years ago. Yes, I think Australia's probably a little more exuberant than other markets at the moment, but all the stepping stones are right for us at the moment. I think we're coming out at a really good time.
Yeah, it's taken a little while for things to fall into place at Bougouni, though, hasn't it? I mean, you had to undergo some complex talks with the government officials there and you know, get things set up properly. That took a while, but now you've had this ceremony, you're kind of up and running.
Yeah. Look, it's, in some ways, the ceremony is incidental, but you're right. Some of the discussions we've had take time, and some of that relates, I think, to saying that, you know, lithium, bulk mining, it's a new thing for Mali, and to make sure that the government and the officials are up to speed and that we're able to clearly state what we're doing and what we expect to achieve. They're things that are important for us and for the government so that we can continue that good working relationship. And Mali, you know, it's had its challenges over the years. It's got a new mining code in place and making sure that everyone's aligned and regularized to that code also takes time. And we feel that we were able to negotiate and discuss and deal with the government on a good level. I think we've done it as quickly as we possibly could, but, you know, some things we'd like it to have been quicker. But, you know, Alistair, when you look at it, if it wasn't for some delays, we might have been selling it sub $700 a tonne rather than where we are now, closer to 1,000. So the value of our product increased while we were in discussion.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it, I suppose. And before we move off from the ceremony, tell us a little bit about the ceremony. What do you actually do? You gather a bunch of dignitaries together and have some product put onto a lorry and then wave goodbye to it as it drives down the road? Or is it more serious than that?
In some ways, it might even be a little more mundane than that. You know, we have a lot of people get up and give speeches, have some community dancing and involvement and tour of the site. But really, it's, you know, in some ways for us, it's a real positive for the community and to allow them in and to highlight their value to Mali and their value to the region. I think it's really good. Like it's one of those funny things. It's a really positive story. It's really positive news in Mali, and our team's really, really happy. You know, we've got, I've said a few times in previous discussions with people that at our peak we had about 650 employees for the development, 630 roughly from Mali, and even better than that, 330 odd from the immediate local region. And, you know, that's a really good impact. And again, something that our team and we're proud of, and we're happy that the community is so supportive of us.
So let's have a quick rundown of Bougouni and how it sits at the moment then. We've talked about this ceremony and the shipment going off, but what are the parameters of Bougouni? How big is it? What sort of production rates are you looking to hit? Tell us some of the stats that you think are relevant.
Okay, right now we've started what we call the Stage 1 development, which is a dense media separation plant. It's about a 1 million tonne per annum processing plant, and we'll produce 125,000 tonne per annum concentrate. We expect the DMS plant to run for about another five, we're hoping 6 to 7 more years. There's some exploration work, development work to prove up that additional feed. We have one open pit operating. What we're seeing from that pit at the moment is the correlation between the exploration model and the mining model is working really well. We see that we're producing what we expect to produce from the pit, and that is going really well through the plant. We stopped the plant for a period late August to September to do some engineering improvements and debottlenecking work, some work on the crushing circuit and the processing, the wet end processing plant, to get those improvements. So we expect now to be really running at nameplate as soon as possible, and starting to deliver on that promise of 125,000 tonne a year. And one of the key objectives for us this coming year is to demonstrate that consistency of operation, to demonstrate that we are focusing on our cost control, on our production, on our delivery schedule to the port, and demonstrating a very profitable mining operation. So in summary, we've started at Bougouni with what we see as one of the best veins, where it's the best because it has simple metallurgy, open pit mining that we can easily process. What the next stage for us is the development of a flotation plant. And over the course of 2026, we expect to do a lot more drilling, a lot more feasibility study and engineering review of the proposed plant to make an investment decision, starting to look for financing and construction in 2027. So ultimately, what we see at Bougouni is a much expanded project demonstrating a mine life of between 15 to 20 years. Again, coming into a market where the demand for our product is high, the The price is supported and looking on an upward trajectory. And we have the support of our partner, who is also a long-term, takes a long-term view of the lithium market and really keen on seeing the full expansion of the Bougouni project.
So would you describe this initial phase of production as a kind of small-scale startup phase then, or is that a sort of fair characterization?
Well, look, I think that is a fair characterization. I mean, for a lot of people, it's probably not small. 125,000 tons of production is a good production. The way we looked at it was that the capital cost of that development was $65 million. It puts us in the position of generating revenue, paying back all that capital, and allowing us to increase our capital base to fund the stage two development. And given the right environment, and perhaps if we see some further strength in the lithium price, that stage two development is obviously much more likely, but also more likely to be supported from our own cash flow at the project. So yes, it's a starter position. And when we first started talking about that, that was one of the key things that actually allowed us to do the transaction that brought the funding in to start this production cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's always been a certain aspect to mining finance where if you can start an operation, get it cash generative, and then use some of that cash flow to build a bigger operation, investors and institutions understand that model and it makes sense to them.
Yeah, look, I think there is that element to it. Like, we're not risking everything on stage one, but stage one provides a really firm footing for stage two. Stage one obviously offered a lot of upside to our partner Hainan Mining in that we were able to prove that we can mine, prove the concept, and demonstrate the upside. And it's not kind of, in a lot of ways, when you look at bulk commodities, people start talking of the $300-400 million development for these operations. We took the view we could get into production, into cash generation earlier at a much better use of finance.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Hainan there. Tell us a little bit about how that partnership is set up and how it all fits together inside Mali.
Yeah. Look, Hainan Mining is a long-term mining company based in the Hainan province of China. Traditionally, an iron ore miner, have been mining for 30 years or more. Also have oil and gas assets in China, Malaysia, and Oman. They built a lithium hydroxide refinery plant in Hainan Island. They've taken a long-term view of their investment criteria, looking to become involved in green energy, and they wanted to be part of that development chain and partnered with us for the development of Bougouni. They've secured the offtake for the stage one DMS plant, and that material will be feeding into their hydroxide. So you can see that bit of a chain happening from the funding of development, exploration, mining, processing, and refining. And they will then be looking to sell that product into the electric vehicle or battery storage market. They're good. We found them to be a really good company. And when you say how did we, the process of getting Hainan involved, well, from our view, we actually looked worldwide for partners. We looked into North America, Europe, other companies in Asia, and other groups were very interested. But what we found was Hainan was clearly the most interested and willing to partner and become involved. And actually, have continued that right through this development process.
So are they, do they have an ownership at the project level?
They do. They're 51% of the project level. So Codel, we moved all our lithium assets into a subsidiary company, Codel Mining UK, and Hainan Mining have invested into Codel Mining UK, and they're 51%, we're 49%.
Right. So they're really kind of on board.
Just on the back of that. Yeah, well, they're into it. You know, that was a $100 million investment, one-off straight into the project level. And on top of that, it was just under $18 million invested into PLC. So, you know, financially, project is well supported. PLC, we're well supported. Gives us that ability to continue to explore what we have, but also look to grow Codel through acquisition of other projects, ongoing exploration. We're really keen to take advantage of this opportunity we have.
Yeah, I mean, and presumably Hainan will be the likely cornerstone when you come to take an investment decision on expansion at Bougouni itself.
Yes, exactly. We have in our negotiations, the offtake rights for the stage two have been kept separate. There's an opportunity to use some of that offtake rights for perhaps financial support. And Hainan are a group who are very keen to secure long-term supply for their plant. So there's that aspect to the opportunity, or there's room potentially for other groups. You mentioned earlier that Australia seems to be waking up earlier than others, but you know, we're seeing a lot of interest worldwide, North America and Europe, people looking to start secure access to product, and keeping that offtake separate is potentially quite a valuable thing.
So just as a point of information, what is your product? Because you mentioned you're shipping to their hydroxide plant. So what is the actual lithium form that you're shipping?
We produce a spodumene concentrate. So spodumene is the lithium-bearing mineral that's, in our case, hosted in pegmatite bodies in the project. So our process is to mine and process and concentrate the spodumene minerals, and then we ship those minerals. And we are targeting a grade of 5.5% out of the plant. Normally, when you see spodumene concentrate prices, they're generally referring to a 6% concentrate. So, you know, we're a little bit of a discount to the market, but it's something that we can achieve well with our plant setup. So, you know, it's again, we produce a little bit more, we sell a bit more, we sell a good product. It's got very low impurities, and it's a product that's in high demand.
And is that a product that will be similar to the product from the expanded operation as well? Is it going to be the same?
Exactly. Yeah. Not exactly the same. What happens with the DMS plant is the product actually is quite a coarse grain. Like if you imagine coarse sand, coarse sort of gravel material, that's what is produced in the DMS plant. In the flotation plant, so our stage two plant, it actually produces more of a finer powder or more clay-like material, but it's still spodumene concentrate. So spodumene mineral goes through a concentrating process and then that's sold. Hainan buy it and then use the refinery to convert the spodumene to lithium hydroxide, and they're also going to add carbonate stream. So they'll be producing both lithium hydroxide and lithium carbonate material that then can be sold to battery manufacturers.
So, I mean, a question occurs to me, Bernard, why did Hainan not just buy the entirety of Bougouni? It seems like it makes sense to them. They want the product. They've got the hydroxide plant. You know, the logistics and supply chain seem to be set up now. Why didn't they just go all in and take the whole thing over?
You know, they would have to pay more money, substantially more money, I would imagine, for a start. But seriously, Alistair, I guess what we bring to the partnership is that experience in West Africa. The team that led the discovery and the early development, the relationships we have with the community and the Mali government, and, you know, as well, Mali being landlocked, we export via Cote d'Ivoire, and again, we're very well supported and respected in Cote d'Ivoire and Mali, and we bring those things to the partnership. And, you know, in some ways, a direct purchase would have possibly led to a loss of a lot of information. We've been involved in the project since August 2016. When we became involved, there was no drilling, no previous exploration, no work. To go from that point to mining in 2025 is really rapid, and that learning curve for our partner is still quite a big curve. So I'd probably, you know, if it was 100% sale, we as Coda would have had a lot more money, but Hainan may have had a lot more headaches.
Right. So in any event, there's going to be cash coming into the company now. What's that going to look like? What are investors going to see? Investors in Coda are going to see the cash is going to come in. Is it just going to build up? I mean, presumably the margins are, you know, healthy at the moment. What can you tell us about that?
So what the initial aims of the operation will be to pay back all of our capital investment, and that will be recovered into Codal Mining UK, both for the construction of the plant, the historic exploration, and to ensure that we recover all of that capital investment. So that will then be money paid up to KMUK, and then we need, as a group, to decide what our next stage is, if we put that down again into Bougouni as shareholder loans, capital investment for the development of stage two. We need to discuss that. But ultimately it is, as you say, it's a fact that initially we do want to recover what we've invested. And then the stages are potential opportunities for dividend payment out of KMUK up to the shareholders being Hainan and Codel. You know, but let's see, I don't want to start putting any horses and carts even close together, Alistair, before we've started to realise how well we are going. But that's ultimately the goal, is to start recovering and then generating profit.
So at what point will you guys and the market be able to, as you say, realise how well you are going? How are you going to measure that, and when do you think you'll be able to get a real feel for how it's going?
Our goals, number one, is to become that reliable producer, producing at least 10,000 tonne a month, trucking it to the port, shipping it to China, generating revenue, and doing that at a profit. So for us, the key controls are obviously cost control and continual improvement of the operation, expansion of the stage one DMS, if we possibly can, through improvements at the Angolana pit and extensions to that resource, and additional feed to that plant. And we have some good clear targets there that we think we can expand that mine life. So those things are things that I think will start to demonstrate how well it is going to shareholders and to government and to, you know, potential investors, to see that we are a reliable, profitable producer. And the next stage will also be, concurrently with this work on the stage one DMS and this 125,000 ton a year, is that work to demonstrate the value of stage two. And over the course of 2026, we expect to do further drilling at Boumou in particular, and the Sogola Bale and other targets around that area for the flotation plant. We expect to undertake a range of metallurgical studies, geotechnical studies, and engineering studies to complete a feasibility in 2026 that will allow us to make that financial decision about stage two. So, again, that fundamental support and demonstrating a long life operation is really important to us, and I think that will be important to investors.
So just to make sure I understood that correctly, you expect to be in a position to make a decision about stage two next year. So that's exciting then. So you're moving pretty quickly.
Yeah, look, I think that's been our whole modus operandi since we've got involved with Bougouni, is recognition that it's a growing market, that there's opportunities for us, that in some ways lithium is still quite an immature market, but the growth is huge, the potential is huge. And if we can start getting the flotation decision made, the construction, you know, there's ultimately a dream of having both plants operating at the same time, and that makes a really fantastic project.
So, I mean, in terms of expansion in Mali, is it helpful that your partner is Chinese and perhaps slightly less prone to getting nervous about political risk in a jurisdiction like that? Because, I mean, some investors have been watching Mali over the last, I don't know how many months years, and just saying that, this looks like a little bit of a volatile place to be. I mean, you managed to have made it work, apparently, but not everyone has.
Yeah, look, but I still would point to a group like B2Gold operating the Fekola gold mine and doing really, really well. Allied Gold operating gold mines in Mali West and again doing really well. And you know, I think it's this sometimes, you know, companies have to make a decision and people make a decision on risk and reward. And in our situation, we looked at Bougouni and thought right from the start that it looked like a mining opportunity. And as a company, we were prepared to push through that. Being involved for a longer term, I don't think it means that we're less aware of or more blasé about risks, but I think that we're more close to the reality of what we need to do to succeed. And that is long-term strong relations with government. And you know, for us, for me, it doesn't really matter who the government is, just so long as we maintain our working relationship with them. With the local community, that's more important to us than good relations with the local chiefs, local villages, and the Bougouni community really underpins the support that we see for our operation. So yeah, I certainly see a lot of investors saying Mali's too risky for them. But you know, perhaps Alistair, a slight contrarian view is that offers a lot more opportunity for companies like Coda, where we are in Mali. We feel that we can navigate Mali and understand some of the risks. And I still would maintain there's lots of opportunities for companies like us in Mali.
I mean, as I understand it, Mali is to some degree, at least, a country of two halves anyway, where a lot of the real uncertainty is in the north of the country. And as you sort of travel further south, the situation is much more stable. So it really, in part, it depends where you are.
Yeah, look, there's certainly that been that aspect to it for a long period now, in particular the northeast, in that border region that's Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, Algeria. That's Saharan country. There's been insurgency there for a long time. And you know, there's some periods where you think it's improving and others where you wonder, will it ever end? But that whole sort of Saharan belt has ongoing difficulties and has had for a long time. But, you know, Mali South and Mali West have continued to operate quite successfully. They're very rural primary industry communities. And again, like I can only really reflect directly on what's happened to us. And we've lived in the town of Bougouni since 2016. We've never had a problem. Driven up and down to Bamako and traveled regularly and widely, and no problems. certainly not thinking we know anything better than anyone else, but our system seems to work at the moment.
Yeah, well, it does seem to work since you're shipping product now and you're planning an expansion. That's kind of speaking that's speaking a certain amount of success, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I think so. Look, and you know, I like to tell our guys, like, they can be rightly happy with what they've done. Like, the building of the plant is a big achievement for the engineering and the mining team, for the geology and the exploration team. The discovery and the development is, you know, big pluses. And I see a lot of that, and I remind the guys that they've been involved in something that's really good. Good for them, good for their careers, good for the community.
So you mentioned a few minutes ago, Bernard, that you guys might consider acquisitions. I'll be interested to know if you know what more you might be willing or able to say on that subject.
Well, I guess I'm like every CEO, Alistair. We look for opportunities, and if we can find something cheap and we think we can add value to it, we'd be interested. But on a more serious note, obviously, we like lithium. I think the impact that West Africa, in general, broader sense of West Africa from Ghana, Nigeria, you know, Cote d'Ivoire, Mali region, that will be a big hub for lithium in the future. I think we can be a big part of that. We have obviously experience and some expertise in the exploration, delineation and development of operations. So I think that would be a priority for us if we can find something. And, you know, we're not, I haven't seen anything yet that I think is worth getting too excited about. But I will say that I think there's certainly things in West Africa that will come up. Gold, obviously, is a great opportunity as well in West Africa. Again, our team is very experienced. So that's the kind of initial focus of what we're looking for. But, you know, mining's worldwide, and, you know, Africa's a big place, and we're happy to try and find something to grow our company. I'm sort of cognizant, and our team, the board and executives, we're all conscious that, you know, there's a lot of risk in a one mine operation, one mining company, and we're the junior partner in that as well. So we don't want to fall flat, not really having given things a good shake.
What would Hainan think of an acquisition then? Do you think they would be willing and able to move into a jurisdiction with which they're not familiar?
Yeah, I think so. You know, relatively early on in our discussions, it was clear that they are also quite a company very keen on growth, very keen on expansion and development. They look at lithium as a long-term opportunity. And they, you know, they invested money into Kodal directly on that basis of supporting us and supporting the growth of the company. And, you know, in some ways it's a great thing for us to approach projects thinking that there's an opportunity that will have a big, big player behind us.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great to have support of that kind of company. I mean, you mentioned they do iron ore as well. So, I mean, they've obviously got other commodities besides lithium in mind for their operations too.
Yeah, I think so. Look, you know, it is that sort of company where they don't mind having a spread of assets. And as I said, one of their main things is oil and gas in China, Malaysia and Oman. You know, they're a really dynamic company and good to be involved with.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of oil and gas in West Africa too, but is that something Kodal itself would consider?
No.
So mining all the way, is it, Bernard?
Yes, that's right. Sometimes, Alistair, a short, straight answer is the best. That's not for us.
Yeah, they don't. They've tended to mix well, really, have they? Oil and gas and mining. I mean, BP had a go in the 80s, but generally, and BHP, yeah. I suppose, did it for a while. But generally speaking,
Shell Minerals, Shell yeah. did it. You know.
Yeah.
Look, it's such a different. You know, I mean, you could say it's all mining related and everything, but really, it's so different. Just even cost structure, timing. Yeah, it's just. But we think we've got a lot more upside doing what we do well.
Yeah. So what? I mean, talking of upside, what are your thoughts about lithium then, in general? Because I mean, we've alluded to it in this conversation a little bit, but. You know, the price has been improving lately, and some people are getting sort of somewhat exuberant about the lithium market again. Obviously, it's good for you just in terms of what you can sell product for. But, you know, how do you sort of see the wider context in which you operate the lithium market looking ahead?
Yeah, look, I think to start with, a lot of the thoughts of myself and company are that take a long-term view on lithium, take a view that's 20, 30 years out, and that's the driver for where we see ourselves heading. Lithium is sort of an irreplaceable part of this green energy revolution. Battery storage is continuing to grow, and the recognition of its use in national grids and larger grid systems is really critical. Electric vehicles, while you might hear that there's a drop in the percentage uptake, but it's always coming from a much larger base year on year. The demand is still growing. We see it as a really strong future. So the next phase is, you know, price-wise, well, lithium, as far as we can see, is still quite an immature market. You know, there's no recognized spot market. There's no LME sort of controlling a market. There's actually contract basis that in a lot of ways seems to control the market. And that has, you know, even over the 10 years since we got involved, or 8 or 9 years we got involved in Pagoonie, we've seen a couple of serious drops in price and, you know, one amazing spike in price. And that sort of leads to uncertainty for investors and planners. And, you know, in our case, we secured funding and we started construction and, you know, the market took a pretty steep dive, but we were in a good position to keep going, and we did. Now we're coming out into a more supportive market. And I think, Alistair, you know, I don't know for sure, and, you know, but in this case, I think I can't recall any other mines that have opened in the last 3 years other than us and Goulamina in Mali. And we've seen a lot of mines close. And I think we're confident that we're coming into a strong environment, and we expect to continue to become a really long-term supplier to the industry.
I mean, there's some interesting lithium developments in Zimbabwe happening. I can't remember if they're up and running yet. I mean, I'm just thinking of Premier African have got one that's been going through all sorts of ups and downs. But there's another one that was bought by a Chinese company called Prospect, I think, and that that's certainly moving ahead. I don't know if they're in production yet, but you know, there are one or two companies around like you, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, though. It's how to convert that potential to real production. And, you know, it's hard work. It's actually a lot more in the early planning phase than I think people realise. I think it's important to make sure you understand the risks you're getting involved with. And some of what I've seen in Zimbabwe, a bit different from what we have, because we're quite lucky that our pegmatites and the mineralization is dominantly spodumene. Some of those operations have a mix of perhaps less of the valuable lithium minerals. But, you know, I'm actually really positive of a lot of development coming out of Africa out of Zimbabwe, out of the DRC and out of Nigeria. There's some fantastic opportunities. In East Africa, Rwanda, Tanzania, Kenya, you know, there's opportunities. And I think what we're going to see over the next few years is a lot more exploration and delineation work to start deciding which ones are priorities and high priorities for development.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you mentioned we were talking about acquisitions a moment ago. So you're obviously aware of the developments that are taking place around the world. Do you sort of think any jurisdictions are, you know, offer more attractions to companies than others?
Well, I guess, you know, as we said earlier, it's sometimes that assessment of risk versus reward. And in our case, the risk in West Africa, you have to understand it and be confident that you can deal with the challenges, and the rewards can be really quite high. Or you have a look at something like Australia, and, you know, your risks may be lower in terms of tenure, but you've got higher costs, you've got a higher regulatory environment to deal with, your ability to go from discovery to mining is a much more extended process. And I'd say the same about Canada, where, you know, you're possibly looking at a 10-year permitting phase rather than, in our case, 2 to 3 year permitting that allowed us to move through to that financing quite quickly. So opportunities, you know, I guess maybe I'm an optimist, but I do see lots of opportunities everywhere in Europe, in North America and Africa. In some ways, perhaps at the moment, Africa's our hunting ground.
Yeah, I mean, you've certainly made an impression there. So tell us, as we're about to wrap up, Bernard, what can we expect for 2026? I mean, we have mentioned several things, but news flow in the first few months of the year, how's that going to look? And then what will the company do after that?
Yeah, look, one of the things that part and parcel of becoming that reliable, steady state producer that I mentioned will be those sort of quarterly updates on mine progress, on our delivery schedule, on meeting our targets, on our cost, and our general update on the operation progress. Secondly, news, of course, will be around that stage two, continued drilling results, metallurgical results, and ultimately the result of that feasibility study. Separately from Bougouni, we hope that we've got news from Codel on either exploration and on our existing gold assets, and, you know, we expect good news wherever we explore, or the opportunity for us to become involved in an expansionary way in other projects. So 2026, again, you know, I think sometimes I get to the end of the year and you're quite tired, but you look back and you say, you know, what a great year. And 2025 has been a fantastic year for Codel, particularly with our involvement in Bougouni. And I think 2026 is going to be another great year for us, building on Bougouni, expanding our company, demonstrating that cash flow, but also continuing to look for those growth opportunities.
Well, we wish you well with the growth opportunities and with the existing production, Bernard. Thanks very much for joining us today, and all the best.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.